everyone. Welcome to another episode of Cloud Unfiltered. I'm your host, Michael Chenitz. Today we have Vic Gamma.
Hey, Mike.
Kong headquarters. Is it Kong HQ or is it just Kong?
Just Kong.
Go to Kong HQ, so it's kind of like, you know, I never know whether to call Kong or Kong HQ.
No, the company company is Kong because it's named after the basic product, Kong.
Yeah,
everything
yeah.
started with Kong. So
Yeah. It all started. That's great.
And the problem is with the when you try to get the cool cool name.
Yeah.
The cool name and the domains already taken, so you need to come up with something. I don't know, HQ or like the Kong or you know this type of stuff. So yeah. So that's why the website is Kong HQ, but the company is Kong. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and that's great. So you know it's interesting. This is such a huge topic these days. One of the things that we talk about is API gateways, and you hear this term a lot. So let's just break it down for a second for all the listeners out there and viewers. What is an API gateway? Why do we need this? So let's just start there, and then we'll dig in a little further.
So I think your audience is technical enough, so I can like swear as I can in terms of like the technical jargon and stuff like that, right? API gateway is essentially implementation of gateway pattern. Like if you old enough in the industry, you remember this like enterprise integration patterns, and there was a pattern about gateway. So essentially, it's something that lets you into something. So something that meets you. And maybe do some of the things. So think about this, you have the bouncer at the discotheque and it needs to check your ID. It needs to check that you are, you know, at the age where you will be able to drink. Same thing with the API gateways. This is a software that allows you to, you can put some of the logic on top of it, so your services, your upstream services and application don't have to do this. Because, like, why we have a bouncer there? Because the bartender doesn't have a time to check every ID. So in same, your application doesn't have to check like every ID or implement all possible authentication and authorization logic. So that's why you need to have the API gateway that stands in front of your application that can do some of the like heavy lifting that you don't have to do in your application.
Yeah. And you know, so previous to this, really people would use things that weren't necessarily totally meant for this. So, you know, we would use things probably like, you know, Nginx and Apache and things like that, but they could do a lot of other things. They weren't lightweight. They were web servers themselves.
Right.
They did a lot of that. So this kind of abstracted away a little bit of that, you know, just the pieces that are needed, really.
Yeah, exactly. So the things that we all love and use these days, like Nginx, for example, that runs like a, I don't know, like a bigger part of the internet these days, it's still there. It
yeah,
still can be
like
a working horse,
yeah.
But there will be some additional logic that needs to put this. So this HTTP servers and HTTP proxies, they also perform reverse proxy logic sometimes. And this is how some users, this is how they end up in the gateway world. They want to do a little bit more on the reverse proxy side of things. So not allow to traffic go out, but rather the traffic go in and routing to a specific, you know, specific service.
Yeah, and I would say that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but this is, you know, my assumption is that, you know, something like an API gateway is so needed right now because of microservices. Microservices had made this almost a necessity because you have all these services all over the place. And, you know, so you need a way for them to, you know, from the outside to come in and figure out where they're coming in and how they're going to communicate and what pieces of those are going to go to those services.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So the routing logic is a very important part of the API gateway. Your consumer sort of API, either it can be mobile client or any other client, you can have a like API as a product. You're building something like, I don't know, Twitter, they expose their API. They need to have an API gateway on top of their gigantic service that, and every time with hitting, for example, like a Firehose API, it doesn't necessarily will go to one service. But we as the developers, we don't care. We just want to consume the Firehose API. And internally, the gateway will handle the logic of the, you know, aggregating some of the responses from multiple services, do a transformation. Another thing that's very popular and common is, say, you want to go with the, new features in your API as a developer internally, like you're a developer of microservice. However, you have some sort of SLAs for your API consumers, and you cannot just like go and tell them like, you know, we're switching. What you can do here, you can do like some of the request transformations to support like different versions of the clients. Based on some headers, you can route to one service, version one or version two or version three, and you can, you know, have a backward compatibility in your service without, you know, slowing you down. You still can continue to innovate and develop new services, but API Gateway allows you to have this flexibility and have this control over how the traffic will render the service.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I always have this conversation with people, and I have this conference. Whenever I do a conference, I love to do this talk, which is like the evolution of the API and where they kind of came from, and also microservices. And I always talk about the fact of how this all came about, you know, because traditionally there was a lot of in the legacy application, there weren't these microservices. It was monolithic. You had libraries, and those libraries, everything was kind of linked together. So you just went out to those libraries and everything was on one server. You know, you might have had a database you connected to, you had it on a single server. Really, the need for all this came from the fact that you wanted to design these services in a better way and introduce them faster. And that's really where the need for the microservice came in, was the fact that, you know, we wanted to be able to say, okay, just this piece, maybe just the part that takes payments, we're just going to introduce that slowly and use something, maybe a canary deployment that will allow us to introduce it and check to see whether there's any errors. And if there are, you know, back it off really quick.
Yeah.
So now you're starting to, you know, really get, you know, weigh the risk out a little bit better. So would you say that's what you see like a lot of your customers, and do you think that's true what I'm kind of describing there?
Yes, and this is 100% true, and evolution also happens not only in the developer side of things, but on the vendor side of things. You point out that the web servers like HTTP, the Nginx or Apache HTTPD, those things were used as a kind of like a load balancer to front these applications. And since like we're on the KubeCon, I think we can say like that we right now on the KubeCon.
Yes,
those
absolutely.
Things were also introduced in Kubernetes, like as an ingress. And when you have an ingress in front of your application, it's essentially your reverse proxy. It doesn't do anything much, but allows the traffic go in your server. And based on certain routes, it will go into a particular service inside Kubernetes. Now, when you try to evolve this idea, you're definitely going into the route that you need to do a little bit more, like things like canary deployments, and you want to have some sort of like a weighted logic, and like 50% of requests will go to this one, 50% goes to version 2. And the overall thinking about this and how the systems like a Kubernetes and Ingress need to work come into something that called a Gateway API. This is something that the Kubernetes Network and Special Interest Group was working right now. It's close to beta state. But essentially, it supersedes functionality for Ingress by providing these the gateway-like capabilities to any system that will be front your services that runs on Kubernetes. So yes, this is thinking evolves not only application development, like you said, like you want to introduce like slowly your new payment service, but also from perspective of vendors and community, they want to support these developers to start thinking in a more gateway-like approach rather than just a simple like HTTP proxy.
Yeah, and also I think what a lot of people don't realize too is that the combination of these API gateways and a service mesh is really powerful in that that's where you get most of your data and information about how these services are running.
Yeah.
So one of the biggest problems you have in something like, you know, Kubernetes, which is great, believe me, I'm the biggest Kubernetes fan around, you know, but you need a way to observe, you need a way to get the data, you need a way to get the telemetry, you need to understand and make decisions on that. And that's really where, you know, this becomes hugely powerful, is when you combine those things together and you can get that data and telemetry. It also offloads a lot of that, the onus on the developer to create a lot of that stuff
yep.
that you would need, like encryption and like, you know, the telemetry and all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, You know, one of the things I do want to mention, though, and I think this is across the industry, and this isn't, by the way, in any way a Kong problem, is that there are so many solutions out there right now, and there are so many different service meshes and so many different gateways and so many different, you know, and now, even as you said, you know, Kubernetes itself is looking at API gateways. So,
Yep. So
where is the right point in your mind to, like, should there be, you know, a Kubernetes gateway, or should that be a third party thing, or should there be a service mesh, and should there be like a standard service mesh in Kubernetes? You know, I feel like there's so many of these different pieces that sometimes people don't know where to go and how to mix them together. So any recommendations, like, you know, what do you see, and what do you feel about that?
Yeah, so I feel very interesting. So from one point of view, I really love the standard things, but from another point of view, I'm a huge fan of this CD comics, where you can see that, we have 10 competing standards. Let's create one that will, you know, merge them all. And now we have 11 competing standards now. So that's why I'm very, not practical or pragmatic about the standards.
Yeah, yeah.
So I've been in the Java world for a while, and I've seen some of the standards, how they evolve around like a Java E space. I was doing, like back in the day, I was doing like enterprise middleware, and I was doing the Hazelcast, which is like in-memory data grid.
Yep.
And we were the part of the committee who worked on the JCache standard. And it was like 10 years they working on the standard to release like a first version, because no one can agree like what needs to be there. Like, what's the cache, or what is the, like, what pieces of computation you need to put into cache, like how you can do like entry processing and things like that. Same thing with the gateways and Kubernetes and the service meshes. I think having some of the I'm looking to the standard not from perspective of everyone needs to implement it, but I'm looking to this one from perspective of interface and implementation. In a object-oriented language, you can define an interface and you can implement this interface, but you can also provide some extra functionality on top of this interface. Should it be standard interface that all developers need to code against? Yeah, I'm pretty sure that should be one. Very difficult to agree about at some point. We need to stop kind of like standard things, and the rest of the stuff would be rely on the implementation. I think the ingress in Kubernetes, it didn't go very far to define this functionality that can be done on the edge, on the this kind of like a gateway level. So that's something that gateway API will fix. Specifically, ingress was around, design was around L7 protocols, HTTP, HTTPS. However, we know that our microservices these days talking to gRPC, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's all L7, you can technically proxy this, but you need to have a support on proxying the streaming protocols on the gateway level, on the actual implementation. So the gateway API makes it a little bit more implicit in terms of how you're thinking about your gateway, because you define a like gateway class and you define your gateway. It's kind of gateway class is your interface and the gateway is your implementation. You can have a multiple instances of this gateway class that is serving different purposes. Plus, community realized that there's also need to deploy not only HTTP-based services. TCP, UDP is still a thing. You want to deploy some databases there. You can deploy, I don't know, VPN server. You can deploy DNS, which also runs on UDP, and expose this to outside world so the consumers can use. It's not possible to do with standard ingress. You need to either do some hacks around like load balancer and the node ports, or you have a standard way to do this through, it's going to be like TCP or UDP route. This is going to be standard object. You define this and say, hey, my service does serve TCP. Here we go. And the gateway will handle all this type of jazz. So.
Yeah, yeah. No, and I do agree. I mean, it's always a you know, you have to weigh it out. You know, what needs to be as part of the core? And that's the biggest thing. It's like, what has to be part of that Kubernetes
release
story?
Early and iterate more often. That's kind of like agile way of doing this.
I totally agree with that. One of the things that I think about all the time with a lot of these API gateways is, you know, a lot of stuff is defined in YAML and things like that, and I don't know if they do this already. I honestly haven't researched it that much, but I would love to see applications have libraries that self register with like gateways. So you don't have to create a YAML. You don't have to create it. It could just say the service is coming up, I'm going to register, and automatically I don't have to do anything. It knows, the gateway is aware of that and knows the service came up and can register itself. I feel like that's the next level. I don't know, I haven't seen that yet, but I would love to see just services come up, connect, register. Of course,
that's a really cool idea. I think I can hack around some example that can do that. So the difference between, again, the gateways and the HTTP service in the past, HTTP servers would require configuration management. Mm-hmm. You need to have an updated configuration. You need to restart the server. Things like that. With the gateway, with gateways, we actually went a little bit over the top, I think. For example, at Conk, we support this kind of like a separation from data plane and control plane. So essentially, our actual proxy that routes your traffic can run in the headless mode. So there would be no admin API, there would be nothing. And all these updates will come from the control plane that will be deployed remotely somewhere. And that's the power where you can have a, I think that this is lots of influence come from the service mesh mesh architecture. This is where you have a your data planes run next to your applications, and control plane can send the configuration to all this. But in general, like if you need to like route the traffic, data plane don't need to communicate to control plane often. It's only required like whenever there's configuration update or it will start new service, and you need to rehydrate the local configuration that would be empty. That's one way of doing this, and the way how the service meshes is doing this, they also providing kind of like discovery service when you did the joining the some of the application runs inside the service mesh and joins the service mesh, you will have ability to have a like a routing logic or like service discovery logic, for example.
Sure.
You can have some like special domain name called .mesh, and there's based on convention, you can have my service name .mesh, and this is how you discover the service. Like I want to find order service, and it would be order service .mesh. So you don't need to have maybe you can have it somewhere already pre-configured, and you don't need to worry that the service will be always pointed to the right pod with right instance of your application, and you can do also cool things we just discussed with the canary deployment and like a weighted traffic routing to those things. So I think that's why the people very often asking this, okay, so I'm confused, what's the API gateway, what's the service mesh, and like how they will talk to each other. So all these technologies, they borrow some ideas from each other, you know, the idea of like the separation and hybrid deployment between the control plane and data plane, that definitely comes from the service mesh idea. Also find its implementation in gateways world, and the service mesh will borrow the idea of having the proxy in front of your service, and this proxy will handling stuff like MTLS, handling stuff like retries, the things that we did in libraries. I don't know what's your background. Again, I like to return to Java because in Java we have everything, and all these libraries already done stuff for us for many years, and now we kind of teaching people to focus on business logic, but rather thinking about infrastructure, like how you will secure your application. You don't need to implement this within your application, because if you want to implement similar logic in the different language, you need to make sure they have the same support for, I don't know, like some of the libraries that you use in one language needs to have a same counterpart in a different language. With things like service mesh or even the API gateway, you don't have to do this because the infrastructure will handle like MTLS, for example, for you. So
and there's a lot of great examples out there. I mean, you see Google's I forget what the app was called that everybody uses, but it has like a big, you know, everything over the service mesh, but it has everything, every service written in a different language. One's Go, one's Java, one's, you know.
So I really love this demo. The GCP the Google Cloud Platform team wrote this boutique.
That's it. Yeah, but it was called something else first. I forgot.
It was some e-commerce application every component. Every component written in a different language, And I like to use it because I like to show the people, hey, I didn't touch the code. Like, yep. I just took their containers yep. and wrapped them into the YAML, as yep. you know, yep. like yep. YAML is everywhere.
Yep.
And after that, like, it just works.
Yeah.
It shows that without changing the code, you can like lift and shift your existing container workloads and move them into service mesh world.
So here's another thing that I always think of, because by the way, you know, my background is, you know, I worked for leading a lot of the strategy for cloud data for cloud and compute. I worked on service meshes. I worked on, you know, a lot of stuff we did for Cisco. And we have like three different service meshes, by the way. One of them is network service mesh.
I
project.
Know, like two yeah. at least.
yeah.
Like probably and like Aspen mesh,
Kong.
Right?
We do deal with Kong too. I mean, we actually use you guys for a lot of things too.
Aspen mesh and the Banzai Cloud mesh.
Well, the Banzai Cloud is now Calisti is what we just renamed it to. It was called Service Mesh Manager.
Uh-huh.
And I was actually the TME for that one too. We have an open source project called Network Service Mesh, which uses Spiffy and Spire and does actual ports. That's it doesn't do like, you know, so it's not using layer 7. It's using like, you know, layer 2, you know, 3, 4, sorry.
And, oh, wow.
In terms of opening ports, closing ports, and just as needed. So just as you're communicating over. So it answers that other question of,
nice.
What if you're using stuff that we're not thinking about right now?
Yeah.
You know, in order to do that. And it uses WireGuard to like open up and things like that.
Mm-hmm,
so,
mm-hmm.
And then we have a streaming, what is it called? It's called a network streaming mesh. I always forget what it's called.
The Aspen?
But, no. It's the one that's used for low latency.
Okay.
In terms of things like that. So I'm totally familiar with service meshes. Here's the question I have though is, so we're really a subset of a subset. So when you think about it, there's a lot of people that are still just learning about Kubernetes. Now we're adding API gateways and service mesh. How do we simplify this for people that are just getting into it? How do we make it so that, because I feel like, you know, I understand it, you understand it, and a lot of people who are super into Kubernetes are going to understand it, or even if they're beginning, they're going to start to understand it. But how do we make it easier for people to get into it,
you know,
and understand what these things are?
Developer experience, it's the big part of my day-to-day job. So I do all sorts of developer relations at Kong.
Yeah.
And one of the things that we were frustrated as just engineers before we started the our own project around Kuma, which is a CNCF sandbox project, is that the existing solutions at that time, they were like a super like a convoluted and super meshed with some of the aspects of Kubernetes, and like very, very tight. And there was like using and abusing the CRD model. There was like tons of different custom resources that you need to know. So the idea was that, okay, so what if we'll take the driver technology, the same technology that they use in terms of like a sidecar. So we use a standard, now it's a standard Envoy as a sidecar, because Envoy provides the things that you describe, the observability, capabilities, things, dynamic configuration, so we can like communicate to this Envoy through the like APIs and configure this. And make it like a really simple, just focus on only policies that require for your application. We're not gonna do like a very crazy logic with some of the virtual stuff. You can do this, like transparent proxies and all these things are supported there for more advanced users. For user who just wanna start, you know, you just have a like install the control plane, the container pod into your Kubernetes cluster, or you don't have to have a Kubernetes cluster at all. So Kuma has this idea from the very beginning. It wants to be a universal mesh, and universal means that regardless on deployment point, so we not have a like strong dependency on Kubernetes. You can run this on the VMs.
Mm-hmm.
There's some deployment scripts that allow you to run this in bare metal or any cloud like EC2 or ECS. Obviously, it would be easier on Kubernetes because we can automate and simplify certain things in Kubernetes, but it's not like a requirement, like a strong requirement. You can run this in Windows, as a matter of fact. So,
oh wow!
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And by the way, I'm going to have Varun on later, who had a lot to do with the original Envoy proxy and things like that. So we'll be talking to him later on.
Yeah, stay tuned and don't forget to like and to subscribe. Yeah.
So we only have a few minutes left because I'm trying to keep these pretty small for my editors out here who have this job of editing all these people together. So I want to thank them first of all. Because we have about 20 people coming on this show.
Oh,
and
wow.
You're the first.
It's gonna be hot a couple days. Yeah, yeah. Always the KubeCon is gonna be like hot days meeting people and all this stuff. Yep.
Yeah. So we have about 20 people. You were the first though. So this has to be first.
I appreciate this. Yeah.
And this has been great, by the way. I think this has been an awesome conversation. The question I want to ask: we are at KubeCon. What are you excited about? What are you excited to see about here? I mean, I'm a techie. I'm sure you seem the same way. There's got to be technologies and things that are new that you're probably excited to see and learn about, or maybe even stuff that you didn't know that you've already seen.
I'm just excited to be here.
Yeah, yeah.
After 2 years of virtual events and doing stuff over Zoom. I met a lot of people over the Zoom and we were always kind of like debating in the DevRel community, how are we going to be doing our jobs without like a travel? And it turns out to be okay. It's not perfect, but it turns out to be okay. Like I personally also went like a very like a dark path on the setting up my studio and like all bump up on my production. Now I already seen some of the devices that I need to buy now for my studio. I using the also field recorder, but it's like a Zoom XX, the smaller one.
And
all these kind of things. But I'm excited to finally get back and meet people in person and talk about different technology, different stuff, and talking about standards. Speaking about the standards, yesterday during Service Mesh Con, Envoy team announced that they're going to be working on supporting this gateway API on Kubernetes, and it's going to be a native CNCF project called Envoy Gateway, which is kind of, funny name, because Envoy by itself means gateway, right? And there's going to be Envoy Gateway that will be using the Kubernetes Gateway API. That I'm excited about this because we're also working on Envoy Gateway in the Kuma, and it's already there. So I was doing some of the talks there. So check on YouTube channel. That's a shameless plug.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But this one is actually like this one is a Kong Inc. on YouTube because Kong HQ and Kong was already taken. So we had to go into different ways to speak in, the beginning of this podcast. Yes, I'm excited just to meet people, maybe restore some of the past connection and maybe find some new connection. Maybe we can, I usually like to collaborate with some other DevRels and integrating some of the technologies. There's some official kind of like a partnership levels between the companies, but like we people in trenches, like a DevRel, developer advocates and the field engineers, we can just like, let's do something for fun and see how it works. And it turns out some of the project that we're doing for fun. For example, yesterday I presented some of the developments that we did around integrating server mesh in Kafka, for example.
Yeah.
The people want to use it, like why not? So I just partnered with my friend from Confluent, who's the Kafka people, we build this demo running the service mesh in Kafka together and enabling like the MTLS, enabling like a logging and traffic permissions. That's just in front of the audience. That was exciting.
Yeah, and it's funny because DevRel and I'm in DevRel too. So for me, I see a lot of the innovation come out of DevRel because we're always thinking about how these things can integrate together and what makes sense and also what do people want? You're talking to a lot of people and they're like, this would be cool, but maybe if we could connect this together or do this.
Yeah.
And DevRel is really where a lot of that sometimes comes together, at least the mock-up of it. Sometimes you can't do the coding or the, in logic things, but you're starting to get the concepts there, and then you can hand it over and say, well, we're seeing a lot of people interested in engineering. Maybe you should add some of these features.
Exactly. Yes. That's exactly how I feel, and that's why, I'm super happy to get back and to meet people. And, it's going to be an awesome event.
Well, awesome. Well, where can people find you? So if we're, I know you're probably online. Do you have Twitter? Do you have YouTube? What do you have? How can people get to you?
Yeah. So the easiest way to find me is the Twitter. Twitter will be somewhere in the down
yes,
below in the comments. You can always DM me with any questions around like cloud API connectivity and all this type of jazz and service meshes and API gateways.
Yep.
I do have my personal YouTube channel, but like I'm trying to do more work right now in the Kong YouTube channel. I do streams every 2 weeks. Just like a casual sitting there, breaking things. Sometimes things don't work. Most of the times things don't work. But hey, that's the beauty. It's just to chat and collaborate with some other people. Yes, it's the Kong King. It's a YouTube channel where you can find all my stuff. But hey, just find me on Twitter.
That's so awesome. And by the way, I find when people are working on things and it doesn't work, sometimes that's the more interesting stuff.
Yeah.
Because you're troubleshooting, you're trying to figure it out. And for me watching that, it's like, oh, I went through that same thing.
Yeah.
I did that same thing. A lot of people are scared of that. Like a lot of people are scared to put something out there that is, that's not perfect. But really, that's what people like. People like the realism.
Yeah.
People want to be.
I do have like a super, like a well-prepared demos. Like
yeah,
everything is great. Everything is working. But also I like to do, this type of thing. Okay. So today I'm interesting to, so today I'm hacking around the Helm charts for blah and see how it would work with Kong.
Yep.
And that's the... some of the conversations that I have with customers might influence some of the ideas, because like other day I was talking to this person, they were like in Germany and they kind of like a historically monolithical like a JBoss shop. They running like one big application inside this application server, and that, okay, so we're ready for microservices. How are we doing this? Like how we test this stuff?
Yeah.
And I said, okay, so let me do something for you. So, and I went in stream and I showed the library called like a test containers that allows to, test applications in containers, test real software using containers, kind of like example how the, you can like move, write the test for monolithical, start breaking down, and you still have a, existing application, how the thing will fit into the overall distributed architecture. So, it turns out to be okay, yeah.
Well, this has been great. So thank you so much. Thanks for having you on the show. This has been awesome.
It's great to have you here. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, I would love to have you on the show again. I just think you're
a great would be person. My pleasure.
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely come to yours anytime. So.
Absolutely. Yes, of course. Yes, I'm doing another show, the Concast, the Cloud Connectivity Podcast. So I would love to have you there and get your experience around the service meshes and all the service meshes specifically close to hardware, maybe L2 stuff. I would love to talk to you about
it. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much. And I'll see you again soon.
Yeah, my name is Viktor Gamov, and as always, have a nice day.
All right. Thank you.